All right, we are keeping on here with this course, System Center Service Manager 2012. And we are joined again by Sean on this last module for reporting and data warehouse. You know, people, I think, are going to start to see a lot of data as they start to use this thing pile up into Service Manager.
Absolutely.
And then what happens after that, right?
Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Yes.
Black hole of data.
There you go, yeah.
So on that note, it's kind of an interesting way that Microsoft positioned System Center 2012. The data warehouse is really a data hub for all of System Center. And what we've seen, even in the small evolution of cumulative updates and service packs, more and more information is being piled into the data warehouse. And I think in 6 months' time, 12 months' time, the data warehouse will be the reporting engine of the platform for all the System Center products as a de facto standard. And one of the things that we're going to try to capture in today's presentation is talk about the architecture and why it's able to scale to meet that conversation. We're going to frame a little bit of lingo so that there's some commonality in language around how the data warehouse is built, how it synchronizes data, how it consumes data, and then presents data. And then we will get a little bit deep dive on actually getting into the data warehouse, editing reports, adding fields to the reports themselves and seeing that actual end result in the data warehouse. So that's what we're going to concentrate on today. So to kind of kick us off, the data warehouse, again, is going to be that pivot point for all of System Center for the near future. And one of the things that we've noticed as an organization is Microsoft's really scaling out this particular set of reporting capabilities. And what that really means is how Service Manager is going to feed from the other ecosystem products. This particular side, you're going to see Service Manager, Operations Manager, and Config Manager as the sources of truth. VMM is already starting to become a conversation in the data warehouse ecosystem, and Orchestrator is starting to become a conversation as well. And it's just going to pile on and on and on. But no matter what the source of truth is, at the end of the day, there's effectively a three-tier process called an ETL process, extract, transform, and load, that's going to take the data from these sources of truth and move them into the data warehouse. Now, when you take a look at the data warehouse and how it's actually layered, the data warehouse itself has effectively three model databases. It has a staging and config database, which is where information is extracted into. It has a repository database where information is transformed into. And the repository database and the DataMart database are modeled the same way. It's just the repository database is kind of a cleansing area for the data before it gets into the third model database, which is the DataMart. So we add these three databases. Now, ETL is nothing new. It's a very popular way to actually model and scrub data. A lot of big companies use it, and Microsoft's adopted that across all of its products, but also obviously within System Center. Now, something very, very unique to how we can scale this is in smaller organizations, you can have all these databases sitting on a couple of SQL servers or even one SQL server in smaller implementations. However, because of the way it's actually modeled, you have the ability to scale out all these databases across SQL instances. So we have customers and ourselves, like the San Francisco Giants as an example. They have one SQL server and it works fine. We have larger pharmaceutical companies that have all their data warehouse tiered out on different SQL servers. They need to be able to scale and consume that data. But your ability to scale up and scale out is very palatable to your size of your organization, how you want to manage that data. Now, something unique to 2012, which is a big push for every organization, is the ability to actually consume this cube model that we all hear about. So I have the unfortunate skill set of knowing SQL pretty well, and that's just a reflection of the fact that I've had to over the past couple of years. But managers, analysts, people that don't need to have the SQL skill set have trouble getting data out of these reporting engines. So what Microsoft's done is they've built a cube model, an OLAP cube model, that effectively takes the information out of the data mart, puts it into this cube model, and allows for anyone in the organization to build reports based upon pivot tables. Check boxes, build graphs, things like that, and visualize the data almost on the fly without having to know SQL. And we'll visualize all those stuff today, but again, we have those sources of truth. Those get brought into the staging config databases, scrubbed in the repository, brought into the data mart, and allows for us to report on not only Service Manager, but again, all the parts of Service System Center and everything that's managed against those work items you've seen today.
So to be clear, the middle data warehouse there for the repository, I know you keep mentioning that's a cleanup process. So I'm assuming that that, even as you scale up and out, that database is probably, and that server is probably going to need to be not too much different even as you scale up. And is that right or wrong?
It's absolutely correct. And okay, the DataMart and the repository basically have the same scalability model because they are almost reflective of one another. So that's definitely something to keep in mind. I know that one of these sessions had a sizing guide as well that walked through that. So that sizing guide is actually a good way to actually understand how big these databases need to be based upon work item count, based upon CI count, based upon all those things in between. Now, just to kind of visualize this just a little bit, we chatted about this, but effectively what Service Manager has operationally is there's an Operations Manager database, and then there's a Data Warehouse databases. And this Operation Manager database is where analysts are creating incidents, problems, service requests, relating them all to the configuration items, and that's the transactional database that sits on top of the management server for Service Manager, which you're seeing here in the bottom left-hand corner. And then on a schedule, which we'll actually will look at the data warehouse jobs, and on a schedule, this ETL process happens. Now, through this ETL process, there is this concept called manage impact sync. And manage impact sync is basically telling the data warehouse, here is the data that I care about, here are the reports that fund that data, and when you synchronize these manage impacts from the operations manager database to the data warehouse, we now are aware of all the data elements, we call them DIM tables, fact tables, outrigger tables, but all the DIM, fact, outrigger tables that you need to be able to present the actual presentation layer. So that ETL process brings that over, and everything's stored inside of the reporting server. So we sit inside of the reporting services server first for Microsoft, the SQL reporting services server, and we have the ability to build this presentation layer around that reporting server. Now, this is going to be the last slide before we actually jump into the actual demonstration here, but there's something to be really, really aware of in how the presentation layer in the data warehouse works. If you ever actually open up the operations manager data, our database, the service manager database, it looks crazy. It is it is an insane database of, it's done on purpose the way it's actually built. It's built in a star schema. It's done on purpose. It's traditional data warehouse modeling, but it's hard to take data outside of the operations manager database. When the data goes from the operations manager database or service manager database into the data warehouse, it goes through this normalization process, and the output of that is a couple of key concepts here. The first is there's this concept of DIM tables, and DIM tables give you basically a reflection of the class, the base class, as well as the attributes. So as an example, the incident-based class would have assigned to, created on, closed on, resolved on. So it has all that data around it. Now, in my presentation, I'm sure in other presentations, we talked about relating items together. Mm-hmm. Now, how we actually relate items together happens through the fact tables. So class-to-class relationships happen in the fact table. So this is a whole other set of tables. I'm actually going to walk you through this from a table perspective. I have kind of a very simple example of this. But the fact tables hold this data together. Last little piece here is the outrigger tables. And the outrigger tables actually hold the enumerations that allow for us, from a presentation perspective, to say, I want to see incidents with the following category, or I want to see incidents with the following resolution category. And those outrigger tables are going to be able to hold that data. And all that happens, all that synchronization happens through that ETL process we talked about.
Well, the ETL will pull it all in, and then through that scrubbing initial process, that's what's doing the cleanup, right?
Exactly. So when it goes from the staging and config to the repository, when it's actually normalizing it, and then it gets put into the data mart.
Yeah. The data mart's the center of truth for it all, right?
Yes, it is a center of truth. Yes. It is a center of truth. Something also to be aware of that I wasn't planning on going into, but the data warehouse itself has, in some of the DIM tables and fact tables, as a 3-year retention cycle. So people think of a data warehouse and think of it a repository forever. Mm-hmm. You can't alter it to actually create a longer life in it, but by default, a lot of the data has a 3-year retention cycle. Something to be aware of as well.
Do you find that, for certain people, maybe they want less than 3 years? I mean, if you're getting tons and tons of data that you'd only care about for maybe a year or 2 years or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely, and you can actually do the reverse. The table schema doesn't get that big, though. It can get big on big enterprise customers, so that may be a concern. I usually see the inverse. I usually see customers want more time with the data because it's their source of truth.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anyone had this in their particular segment, but I'll show you why. If I go to the console here and I go to administration and I go to settings here, there's a data retention settings here. And the data retention settings here basically tells Service Manager, how long do I want to hold this data? This is in default. I think incident by default is 90 days, and problem change, all those. I think they're 365. I don't remember off the top of my head. But generally speaking, especially for large enterprise customers that are doing 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 work items a day, having that in the operations manager database bogs it down. So if you have a harder pruning cycle in the operations manager database, you rely on the data warehouse to be your source of truth. So something to bear in mind, all these topical things, operations manager data, service manager, operations manager data is maintained here. You can scrub it out however you want, and then the data warehouse holds it for 3 years. Something else to keep in mind here, you can't really see because it's not called out, but data will only be scrubbed if a work item is closed. So if you have incidents that are active, resolve, so on and so forth, those stay in the operations manager database. So it's just one of those things to remember. So you
keep mentioning operations manager, but that retention policy setting seems to apply just for service manager.
I'm saying operations manager, the operational database,
okay.
The service manager database. I'm sorry, that's my fault. Operations manager, service manager, they're the same architecture. So it's the database that service manager is actively working in, where everyone's in,
okay.
The service manager.
Just
database.
To make sure people aren't confused that those
for the last 2 minutes, I've been saying operations manager, switch it with service manager.
Okay.
So what we'll do here is we'll jump into the reporting area, and we'll just talk about some key components from a reporting perspective. We'll trail through some of how the data is presented, some of the features here. And then we'll get a little bit deep dive and start talking about the data warehouse. So out of the box, and if you ever watch an actual service manager installation, you have management packs actually getting imported during the service manager installation. And in that process, after you actually install service manager, you latch the data warehouse on, and then MPSync brings over all the reports from all those management pack imports into the data warehouse. When that process happens, you then get the reports library, which is you're seeing here. Now, this is a presentation of the reports library. The actual reports library sits in SQL reporting services in the reports server, which we'll look at in a second here. But this is a presentation layer that gives it the ability to be able to shown inside the service manager console. Something else to bear in mind here is these four little areas here are looking at the service manager database. These two areas here are looking at the data warehouse. And there's actually, the console brings it all together to give this single pane of glass effect, although they are pinging two different areas. So when I want to actually report against things, I have the option to use the default report. So that can look like a couple of different things. You'll see here for all those work items that we've been training on you all day, I have the ability to report on activity management, change management, configuration management. I have the ability to report on configuration manager. So this is an example of config manager data being consumed and being able to present it in the data warehouse. Now this one is just power activity, but you can build your own SQL reporting services reports to show assets by location, assets by model, manufacturer, all coming from the config manager source of truth here. So on and so forth. So service management, release management, problem management, as well as incident management. Now I'm going to pick on incident management a little bit here because this is going to feed into some of my later examples. But when I actually click on the incident management report services folder, what I'm presented with is the report services reports that are actually listed in the incident management area. And when I run these reports, I have the option of doing a couple of different things here. So I'll go ahead and run the list of incidents report. And when I run this, basically what happens is the reporting services engine feeds what's called an RPDL file, which is basically giving us the prompts to be able to filter this data out of the data warehouse. And when I actually take a look at this inside of the report server, it looks a lot different. So let's take a look at this particular report in reporting services here. So we'll go look at the list of incidents report. And you'll see here that these prompts that we just saw in the console, they're not very friendly. You can run reports directly in here, but there is some language you have to be aware of that you want to stay out of this as much as you can. And that's another great piece of how Service Manager puts that presentation layer around this particular set of reports here. Now, when I run a report, I have a couple of options. So obviously this particular report has a ton of filters. I'm in a little demo kit, so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to say I want to see all incidents that were been created since the first year. I can filter by different report parameters like classification category, support group, status, so on and so forth. Now, remember I mentioned outriggers. Outriggers are giving us the ability to enumerate against these dropdowns to be able to provide that data from a filter perspective. So I can do that here as well. when I run this report.
And those outriggers, where are those configured at?
You don't configure. Well,
okay.
Good question. So all this stuff, because it's management pack architecture, is almost an open source concept. Anyone can build a management pack that builds a report and brings that into the data warehouse. So you have the ability to do it at a management pack level, but you can't just go build an outrigger table. Okay. Also, if I were to create a customization, it was Patrick's presentation, he was doing customizations. Mm-hmm. If you were to create a new enumeration and you were to steal that management pack would come over to the data warehouse, and then we have that available to us as an outrigger to build a report.
Okay.
So you have to have a sealed management pack to bring that over.
Okay.
So you'll see here that in my just simple example here, I have all my lists of incidents, and these are the default columns I have for this particular report. Now, when we get into the customization of this, I'm actually going to add a column here from a report's perspective so you see this. But effectively, this is just a nice clean list of incidents that allow for me to be able to show it visually with all my filters and my prompts. Now, outside of that, I have the ability to save this as a favorite report, which would then just drop it into the favorites area of the console. I also have the ability to create what's called a linked report. Now, a linked report is unique because sometimes there's certain reports that you want to run on a continuous basis. And you notice with this particular report, let me bounce back here real quick. There's a ton of filters here. And maybe you as a manager want to run a report based upon a quarterly basis, always assigned a certain set of support groups, a certain set of analysts with these parameters, X, Y, and Z, so on and so forth. You don't want to have to come in here and continually touch those prompts. So what you can do here is you can create a linked report based upon the parameters you have selected. So the only one I changed here is the first day of the year. I can create a linked report, just give it a simple name, example for MMS. I can throw this into a management pack. These are the default management packs. I can create a new one as well, which we recommend. So I'll create a linked report MMS management pack.
So while that's creating, I know that throughout the course of the day, we always are saying you should create a new management pack. What are some of the reasons behind that?
You'll get in trouble.
You'll get in trouble. You'll be scolded. Oh, you put it in the existing database. But I mean, is there what are some of the methodology behind that?
So management pack naming is kind of unique. You really want to keep management pack naming specific to what you're doing, mm-hmm. and the reason for that is, if you have to go in and edit anything, then you have the ability to be very specific to what you're editing. So as an example, if I were creating a set of incident views that were not out of the box, mm-hmm. I would want to create a management pack for incident views. Mm-hmm. Because when I create my management pack for incident views, let's say I don't want them anymore, I can just go to the incident view management pack and delete them, and then they're gone.
Yeah.
Or if I want to just change a couple of columns at a management pack level, I can just go in there and edit those. Or even better, for most environments that have a QA, a test, a dev, a stage, uh-huh. prod environment, whatever you guys have, you can then take that specific management pack view and you can move it from one environment to the other.
Okay.
If you store it in a default one,
you can't do anything. You can't delete it. You can't remove the old stuff. And
exactly.
Now you're bloating up the database with possibly not the best situation.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So you create a lot of awkwardness in terms of being able to manage a lot of different parts of the system.
Okay. Makes sense. Thanks.
So I've created a linked reports MMS management pack here. I can select what folder I want to actually store this in and press OK. Now, when I save this report, you're not going to see it right away. Actually, you won't see it during this presentation, unfortunately. The reason for it is because the MP sync job in the data warehouse has to synchronize again to be able to show that visually in the actual reports folder. So you'll have to trust me and do it in your own environment, let the data warehouse synchronize up. But once you create that, once it synchronizes over, it will then show that linked report in the actual particular folder that you selected. So that's a kind of a good segue into a little bit of how this actually works technologically and actually how it synchronizes visually. So we're going to jump over here to the data warehouse area.
Let me ask one question before you move to the data warehouse. Is there some reports that are built in that tie in kind of pulling in data from multiple sources other than just, let's say, the service manager tickets, right, or incidents? Right.
Yeah.
I mean, configuration management, or you know, there's ones that are specific. It seems like to one thing, but what are some really advanced ones that pull in different areas?
So the cube model, when I show this to you, you're going to be able to click on checkboxes and be able to mine that data. If I run a list of incidents report or a list of change request reports, what I'll see here is let's let this run here.
Because it seems like, you know, that's a lot of the power, right? I mean, a lot of the individual system center products have their own reporting and capability reports, but obviously one of the unique advantages I would think of Service Manager is that you're pulling it all together in one spot, right?
No, that's a perfect example. So let me bring up a particular report here. And what you'll see here in this details report is you'll see the CI data that's actually being changed here. So I have some Windows computers here and some business services. So Active Directory is giving me my Active Directory server. Config Manager is giving me my Active Directory inventory. Operations Manager giving my distributed applications. And what you'll see here in this particular report is you'll see Active Directory being affected by this change request, and you'll see the business services being affected by this change request is here. So this is a change request report, but it's showing you and measuring by other elements of data being brought in from these other sources of truth.
Okay.
Great question. All right, so, and we're not going to actually touch the data warehouse yet. I'm going to go to the data warehouse section so you guys can see how this all synchronizes in the data warehouse area. But effectively, from a data warehouse perspective, we talked about this ETL process, and I'm not going to walk through every single element of this, but it's good to see this so you can understand how this is actually all working. So I effectively have an extract process, and again, the extract process brings this into the staging and configuration area. Then I have a transform process that brings this into the repository, and after it goes to the repository, then I have a load process that brings all my information to its respective data mart. So I have my configuration management data mart, I have my service manager data mart, and I have my operations manager data mart.
Those are all there by default.
These are all there by default. Mm-hmm. And if you were to, come back to your question earlier, if you were to create a management pack that had a new report or new properties on a class, whatever it is, these would all consume them. Assuming you follow best practice in creating that management pack, these would all consume them automatically.
Okay.
Now, this particular one, MPSync, is the job that actually controls when stuff comes over in terms of new information. So if you were to create a new management pack and you wanted that to come over, you would import the management pack in Service Manager. MPSync would run on its schedule. And when it runs on its schedule, it will then load into the management pack area all the management packs that are loaded into the data warehouse. And you'll see here some management packs, like my linked report MMS management pack, is in a waiting stage, because the data warehouse hasn't synchronized yet. Once it synchronizes, it's going to be, okay, here's a new management pack, here's my linked report, boom, I have it in my incident folder. Mm-hmm. You'll see ones that are completed, and this is a reflection of the management packs that have completed their MPSync process, and now they're ready to go through the ETL process for the data warehouse. So it's really simple conversationally. You just got to remember three letters, ETL. You got to understand the flow of the data between all three of them, and then MPSync is kind of a common framework to be able to bring over that management pack data. Most people don't jump into here when they're reporting and troubleshooting. When they're troubleshooting and reporting, they kind of bounce around operations manager errors and try to figure out what's going on. A lot of times, the management pack area is a good way to see why your data isn't synchronizing, because generally speaking, sometimes it's the management pack that actually hasn't come over yet.
Yeah.
It's another way to troubleshoot.
It can't report on that data until that management pack is lit up inside the data warehouse. Yep.
Exactly. All right, so what we're going to do here now is we're actually going to jump into a little bit more of the detail of the reporting server. So I told you that I'm going to pick on this list of incidents report here. And I'm going to run this. Do I still have it open? I do. I'm going to open this up here real quick. And what I want to do is I want to kind of show some of the things of how these actually relate. So first thing is, you'll see a lot of relationships here, like assigned to, created on, resolved on. I'm going to show how we actually visualize that at a database level, show you some linking that's happening. Then what we're going to do is we're going to open up a stored procedure that actually gives us the properties for this particular report. I'm going to show you how to add a column to the stored procedure. Then we're going to go to SQL reporting services and add that particular column to this report, and then we're going to run it again to see the new data. So we're going to get a little deep dive here.
So all of those precursor steps are kind of necessary in order to customize this particular report.
Exactly. And this is a very basic example, but what we want you to walk through is the ability to say, okay, well, here's how the database is modeled. Here's an example of how to actually make this happen. And once you have that frame of reference, then you're going to be able to take this example and say, I want to do X, Y, and Z. How do I get to that? And work backwards from a common example here. Mm-hmm. So what we'll do first here is we will go into SQL here. And what I've done is I've set up a couple of different queries here to kind of walk you through. Before I do that, you'll see on the left-hand side here, we have all those databases that we talked about. We have the staging and config database, which is the extract process. We have the repository, which is the transform process. And then we have those respective data marts, which are the load process. Now, once it gets into the respective data marts, what you'll see here is we have inside of the DW data mart itself, we have a lot of views that show me a lot of different normalized perspectives of data. Now, again, I'm picking on incident management, but you can see here just by scrolling through that you have a lot of views in here that are very friendly, like the config item view, which would show you inventory for workstations and servers. You have the incident dim views, you have the problem dim views, you have the release dim views. So this example that I'm going to walk you through is relative to all the other views, but it's going to be picking on incident here. Now, you would think that when actually looking at this particular set of data that you would just run a select statement against the dim view and you would get all the data you want. And that's not kind of how it works. It does a little bit, but at the end of the day, there is what's called an entity dim key. And the entity dim key is basically linking every single work item and its relationships together. So when we take a look at reporting against an incident, what we want to actually pivot on is not the work item dim key, but we actually want to pivot on the entity dim key. And this is actually going to link us to the work item table. So I'm going to go from the entity dim key to the work item table. And when we open that up, we'll see the entity dim key. And that entity dim key is going to give me the actual work item number. So if I were to match one up, I would then get its respective work item number. Now, I bring this up because the fact tables, the relationship tables, is how we actually present friendly information. So my fact table, my incident table, my view is giving me my assigned to keys, but my fact table is giving me the relationship back to it. So what I need to do is I need to relate my fact table together to be able to show the friendly name for the actual assigned to analyst, which in my example will be Scott Watkins here. So I have my entity dim key from incident view. I then have related that to my work item dim key, which is giving me my ID. If I do a select statement against this particular fact table, I will then get the work item dim key, which will then give me my work item assigned to user dim key. And you'll notice in this particular scenario, I have a lot of tens here. Now, in my particular demo kit, I have a gentleman named Scott Watkins, and Scott is usually assigned to everything because it's very easy for me to pivot around. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to then look at the user table to find this particular key, which we'll run a quick select statement against.
So let me take a step back from all this. How did you know the names of the fields that are associated with the reports in the first place?
I'm going to show that in a second.
Okay, yeah, we're getting there. Okay.
I want to show you how this all relates. Because we talked about dim tables, we talked about fact tables.
Right.
And I want to show the daisy chain relationship between all. So it's very fundamental to how this all relates.
Yeah.
Okay, so you interrupted me. I was on a flow here.
Okay, keep going. Yeah.
So here we go. So I have my work item number. So here's all my work items. Yep. Then I have my primary key for my user. So you see all these tens here.
Yep.
And then you'll see here, if I go find my number 10, which is my primary key, my user dim is Scott. So there's a relationship there. You see that I have the incident dim. I'm going to walk through this one more time. The incident dim key, or the incident dim table, is going to give me my entity dim key. Let's go find it. This is going to be my way to link to the work item dim view. Once I relate my entity dim key to the proper work item, I can then build a report that says, show me incidents assigned to someone, show me incidents with this support group. So that's actually the pivot point, and we'll see that when we look at the stored procedure.
All right.
Once I have that relationship, then I can link that work item number to its particular work item number. That will give me its relationship to, in this particular scenario, who it's assigned to. Mm-hmm. And to get the friendly name for that at the end of the day, I have to go to the user table, which, by the way, the user table is this guy right here in configuration items. This is the user table.
Yep.
I go to the user table, and I say, okay, well, I need number 10. And number 10 is Scott.
Yep.
Okay.
I got how all those are together. I guess I was kind of somewhat asking a more fundamental question of the incident, you know, the name of that table, work item assigned to user fract and work item div serve, like knowing that that is the name of the title that's associated with the item that's in the database itself. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, okay. So outside of me telling you the relationship, yeah. There is actually a job aids pack that actually gives a database schema and actually walks through all of this. It is in the deck. I hid the slide. But it is available in the deck. So I don't know how are you guys publishing that?
Is that available also for somebody to download?
TechNet. Yeah, TechNet? TechNet.
Okay. So there's a way for somebody to say, hey, if I'm in the GUI, I'm walking through all these items. Here is the name of the table that's there so that you can... No, to tie these together.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense now. I got it.
And the respective thing to recognize here is that you may not see it. I'm going to show it to you in a second in a stored procedure, but what you're not seeing here is you're seeing IR number, so your instinct would be go to the incident view. But to get this guy right here, you need to walk through that chain.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of bringing it all together visually.
Right. Okay. Yeah? All right.
And trust me, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, no. I know. I'm just.
There is a lot of reference material out there. Actually, Travis Wright has a ton of reference material. That's where I learned most of my stuff and how to actually get this data. He has a lot of blogs out there.
Yeah.
The Job Aids kit has it as well. You can go find it on.
We're just trying to teach you how to fish a little bit here, right? In this course today.
Exactly.
So you know, giving all those pieces you put together, and so if you want to do something custom, because obviously this is only one view. You now kind of have a little more of an idea, right? So you were going to continue on, right? So we did all this work so that you can understand the relationship, so that eventually, right, you can customize a report to your liking, right?
Yep. So okay. I have worked in the views to show you the relationships back to the actual report. There's actually a lot of stored procedures in the background that actually give you the presentation layer in the reporting server. So what we'll do here is we'll go into the programmability area, which is basically the stored procedures area. And if I open this up a little bit, I have it open already, but you'll see that I have a bunch of stored procedures that feed my SQL reporting services engine. And somewhere down here, I have my get list of incidents stored procedure. And this is actually going to give me the data in my reporting services report that actually shows this report here.
Okay.
So that's where we're going to bring it back into this report. So, if I were to not have this open, let's close this out, and I wanted to modify this, all I'd have to do is right-click and modify the stored procedure, and then I'll get this stored procedure. Now, there's a lot of stuff going on here. I'm not going to go over every piece of it, but I do want to pivot around one thing. Let me see if I can find it here. It's this. I keep saying that we need to join the work item to the entity dim key. This is the relationship we're going backwards on. So we're calling from the incident dim view, and then we're joining that work item dim view. So this is out of the box stored procedures. This is how the relationships work. And so when you're looking at this particular stored procedure, you can see here that we start with the incident dim, we go to the work item, and then we build out the conversation from there. Now, what I'm gonna do here is, it's fairly simple, but I'm gonna actually just add close date to the actual stored procedure. So I want to actually start reporting on not only resolve date, which is there, create date, which is there, but I want to have close date as well. So what I'll do here is I will add close date. Now this I in the beginning is just an alias. It's nothing fancy. So one of these tables here is named I. So I'm just going to add that. And close date is actually on the base class, so I know it's a simple one to add. But again, this is just an example of how we do this. And when you actually add this particular column, what we're going to do is we're going to run that stored procedure. And that's going to regenerate the data to be able to literally latch that particular column into the actual report here. After I've done that, I'm going to go into my actual report. So let's go back here. And actually, I'm going to take a step back here because I've had this open. If I open up Internet Explorer, if I go to my reporting services server, report server, so the one that actually runs report servers, because remember, we scale up and scale out, so there's a lot of server infrastructure here. The one that actually has my report server will actually be my presentation backend for what you saw in the console. So what I'll do here is I'll go into my system center area, my service manager area, and then I'll go into my incident management area, and I'll change this to details view because it's just a lot easier to look at. And I will edit this particular report in report builder. And when that opens up, what we'll see here is the UI that is used to build the actual report.
There is help beyond being a SQL expert, perhaps, here, right?
Yeah. You know what the interesting thing about that is, there is help. There's a lot of online help. Typically, when customers do engagements, this stuff is cross-trained to them. There is a lot of resources out there to help with this type of stuff.
Yeah.
And what I'm doing here is a repeatable process. You can do this same order of operations over and over again to be able to manage this data.
Yeah.
So you'll see here that I have my expressions and I have that data. So these are all my prompts. And this is the actual data that's being brought back by this particular report. Now, if I go to my data set here, I'll see that inside of my table incidents, I don't think I will have closed date yet. Nope, I don't have it yet. So what I'll do here is I'll go to my data set properties. Let me log in. Oops. Oh, password one.
Typo, live demos, that's how it goes.
And then I'm going to refresh the fields here. When I refresh the fields here, and press OK, you'll see my close date has now been added. So my stored procedure provided the data. I need to refresh it in SQL Reporting Services to be able to now have that particular column in my report.
Okay.
Now, to add it visually, now this is going to be a very ugly poor man's version of this, so you can make this a lot prettier if you want, but just to keep it simple, what I'm going to do is make the report bigger here. I'm going to literally drag the report builder out, and I'm going to drag and drop that particular field onto the report. Now, this is going to look really lopsided, and I apologize in advance, but that's basically how you actually... Ooh, I didn't mean to run that. I want to save it. So I've actually now saved the report in the reports builder, and next time I run that in the console, I'll now see that particular column. So let's go ahead and take a look at that. Let's go back to the actual console. Let's close this report out. Go back to my reporting area. And I will run my list of incidents report.
Let's see our column that we added. Here we go.
A lot of pressure.
I know.
I'll get some a little bit more data here. I'll run this here.
And then you'll see close date. See, you were. It's not too bad. It's not too far off there. It didn't make it all super weird or anything.
No, it's ugly.
But
aesthetics, right? You know, you're gonna put this in front of your managers or your.
You want the System Center header bar to go all the way over.
I could have actually drove it over, but I just didn't. But the point here is that that report builder is actually very easy to work with. You can add columns. You can move things around. You can add your own logos. All those things. And I know that was a lot, but if you walk through that process and you think about what I did, I just needed to add a particular column to that stored procedure. And to add that column, I just need to know how the data model worked. And once I knew that the data model worked, then I just need to know what data I want to add. And you can literally work backwards from that example. And a lot of customers do get nervous when they walk through this the first time, but it's really not that hard.
Okay.
It's really not that hard.
Yeah. And if you wanted to make new templates, or could you use an existing report, copy that, and then make a new one based and tweak that new one?
Yeah, absolutely. So to do that, you would literally, on the RPDL file, download it, and then you would save it, rename it, and re-upload it, and then you can use that template to actually build a new report. So you have the ability to do that, and it's literally a download and an upload process. So I would download it here, and then I would upload it here, and then I have my new report.
Okay. That's easy enough.
Yeah.
I think so.
The other thing to kind of bear in mind when you're in the SQL Reporting Services Report Builder is you have the ability to subscribe to reports. So maybe you want these reports to be given to your managers on a certain basis or whatever that may be, quarterly, monthly, and you want to have this data in front of them. You have to do a little bit of reporting services backend stuff, just specify an email address and a SMTP server in report services. But effectively, you get the option to now email. So you can provide email addresses to send emails. You can provide what type of format you want. And I'm going to jump back to this in the console to show you the different formats as well. So maybe a PDF file on a certain interval. Provide the relative schedule that you want, monthly, daily, whatever it may be, all the fields that you can filter for, and press OK. And once you do that, then you will have a subscribed report, which will then kick out that PDF or Excel file or whatever on that particular interval. Mm-hmm. Now, this is something key to think about here in terms of the data presentation. Now, we're working in SQL reporting services, so it has the ability to kick out data in a lot of different formats. And these are some of the common ones here. I don't have to use this particular interface to get the data in this format. I can actually come back here, and in this drop-down here, you'll see here I get those same formats. So I can export this as XML, CSV, PDF, Excel, Word, so on.
I think you got all the major bases covered there, I think.
I think you do.
Yes.